I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They learn our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com or AltRightTV. .com, you can reach us through either means. I was talking to my good friend Brad Love up there in Fort McMurray today, and he had a rather interesting story. He said that he and a friend of his, a big guy, were sitting out in a parking lot, and a couple came by their car. The couple was a white guy, maybe in his 60s, balding, paunchy, and with him was a young Filipina. Brad thought she looked like 14, but she's probably 18 or 19 or 20. Anyway, the friend said very loudly at them, are you dating or babysitting? And the couple, especially the man, fled to his van as quickly as possible. And Brad said, a few minutes later, another couple came along. Once again, a white guy, maybe in his mid-30s, and a Chinese girl. Now, she wasn't quite so young as the Filipina, but, obviously they were, in some sense, a couple. And once again, his provocative friend said, are you dating or babysitting? And once again, in fear, or maybe shame, the white guy fled to his car and peeled away. I'd like to, kind of speculate, but was it shame or, I don't think it was fear. They weren't being menace. So this is the state of race mixing in Fort McMurray. And then Brad said there's a woman he knows who's a part-time clerk at the Cutrate liquor store in town. And he's talked to her on occasion. So he says she's a very, outspoken, assertive sort of person. And she told him that she's married to a black man. Brad did not respond. And then he said, I was driving around town the other day, and I noticed a bus stop. And they're sitting on the curb where these four little pickaninnies or mixed race kids and the woman and the woman's pregnant incidentally, and she too was waiting for a bus. And the boy, the children had these sort of imitation hot dogs that you can buy at any low class gas station stop that might save a gas station that might serve a little bit of not very nutritious food. And Brad said, you wonder what the matter is with this woman. She's married to this black guy who supposedly has a job. And there she is without a car, working part-time. And one wonders what happens to these four children that she's had with this Negro, and presumably, there's another one on the way. And you wonder just what goes on in that woman's head. What is she doing? there's a lot of, officially, of course, we're all supposed to be in favor of race mixing, aren't we? Everybody's free to love whoever they want to love. That's the way we argue. My question is it a good idea? When I was growing up, we were urged not to get involved in a mixed marriage. And this is the funny thing, how times have changed. Back then, a mixed marriage was, not people of a different race. In the family I came from, in a community that would probably be nearly 99% non-white, the thought of a mixed race marriage just wouldn't cross most people's mind. Just not only wasn't done, it wasn't even likely to be done. And there wouldn't be the opportunity unless you really, really sought it out. Anyway, a mixed marriage was Catholic and Protestant, or somebody of a different religion, but that would normally be Catholic and Protestant. And there's a very good reason for that. It wasn't prohibited, of course, but it was strongly argued against, and I'll tell you why. If both parties in the relationship or marriage take their religion, their faith seriously, how do you compromise? It may be doable if there are no children. You go to your church and she goes to hers. But if there are children, well, then, how do you raise them? And in those days, now it may not be that way today because the Catholic Church is so deteriorated, but in those days, you were strongly urged as part of your marriage agreement to get the other party to agree that the children would be raised as Catholics. Well, that would be, that would be good for them, but what about the other party? And so, as You know, anybody who is at all mature knows a marriage is a difficult thing. Two people are joining their lives together, as they say, for better or for worse. despite attraction, despite liking each other, there are always compromises to be made. Compromises are often in the most unexpected areas. I was talking to a woman the other night, and she was talking about a relationship she had had and no longer has. And she said she just couldn't stand. She's attracted to this fellow, but she's a radical vegan, and he's a meat eater. And she said, like, I couldn't stand the thought of dead animals in my fridge, which is the way she describes, you know, let's say a steak or some ground beef or a piece of chicken. That'd be kind of serious. And anybody who's been in a relationship, or preferably a marriage, knows that there's a lot of compromise. And the older you get, the more of the compromise, because we tend to do things in a particular way. I may have a light breakfast, but I eat a good deal later in the day. Other people have to have a hearty breakfast, and they pretty much want to go to bed at 10. There are all sorts of compromises. As you build a life together, that these differences have to be worked out somehow. And that's if you share lots of other things in common, let's say the same race, that maybe even the same ethnicity, the same religion, and so on. Well, how much more of more difficulties are posed in a mixed-race marriage? Like, for one thing, the offspring are never going to look like the white person. They'll all, if we're talking about black, white relationship, the children will be predominantly black in their features. And I've often looked at white women who have bred up several children with a black, and I thought, and I look at the children, and I wonder to myself, what do you see of yourself when you look at that child? Do you see anything of yourself? That it's as if you flushed most of your genes down the toilet. I think it's really a terrible thing. Anyway, that was Brad's report on mixed race relations in Fort McMurray, and he says there's a lot of it. He says that the quality of many of the people up there is really very, very low. Hence, many of them have very little interest in politics, even though politics is the force that led to the tremendous economic damage that's been done to that town. And Brad and I were also talking about the two men, both with non-white women, both when challenged, fled. And they fled not because they were being threatened. It's not because Brad's pal jumped out of his vehicle and, you know, menaced them with a fist or anything like that. He had combat. Ashamed them, I think. And we wondered, you know, Red China sends spies over to Canada, or very often just agents that will gather information. And you wonder what they're reporting back to Red China about the state of manliness and courage in this country. I don't know if this is a generalization, and there's certainly, fortunately, many people who don't fit it, but there is a spirit here. What do you think of a nation where there's a significant number of its males who are so unimpressed with their own kind that they marry people of another race? And at least in these two instances, when challenged on this, or when this was just observed, they weren't even being asked to justify themselves, they fled. They're both healthy-looking men in their 30s. And on an item I've reported on before, the Royal Canadian Navy is about 850 bodies shy of its full complement. So they're trying to recruit more people. Okay, that's understandable enough. And so what they've done is they have decided to change the names, or they propose to change the names of some of the lower ranks. So instead of able-bodied seamen or seamen first class, they're not going to be renamed a genderless sailor. And this was put out for public discussion. But when some of the discussion turned highly critical, a vice admiral in the Navy said that racism, sexism, homophobia would not be tolerated in the Navy, and any existing or current serving members who have those attitudes should consider that this is not a place for them if they cannot uphold the charter views of diversity, etc. There's no place for them in the Navy. I thought, yeah, that's a pretty welcoming approach. Sounds like the sort of unit I'd like to join. You're certainly making me feel not exactly welcome. But in the explanation as to why this should all be, one reason given was that the Navy wanted to create a safe space for to attract more people. And I thought, but it's a military operation, it's a military unit. Safe space shouldn't be top of the mind. I mean, if you want to join the Navy, or the Army, or the Air Force, you're undertaking a certain degree of risk. Now, it may well be you serve your entire tour of duty and service, and never actually see combat. I guess on some level we hope that will be the case, that we don't ever have to go to war again, although we may. But I mean, that can't be first in your mind. If you're not prepared to take any risks, then probably the Navy is not the right place for you. So, and if changing the names are going to make you feel safe. I mean, what is your tolerance level for risk and danger? Oh, well, when they call it seamen, I had bad thoughts. I thought that might only be men. So as a woman, I wouldn't feel very welcome in the Navy, so I'm not going to join. But as they're going to call a new rank sailors, well, now I feel safe. I thought, how pathetic a line of reasoning. And this is from the leadership of the Navy. So back to my question about our hypothetical Red Chinese spies. What would they report back to the masters in Peking? I'm afraid what they would report is that we have become a nation of, or at least we contain very significant elements of effeminacy, cowardice, and just lack of pride in who we are. And that would, I think, impact my view, if I was a red Chinese strategist, about just what sort of opposition Canada and Canadians would offer in a war. And I think we have to be prepared for the fact that the next war may well be, or conflict, not necessarily a full world war, but the next conflict may be with Communist China. And if the dominant thought of our leaders is to make everybody feel safe, we have to give these people a safe space. If that's what's on their mind, we don't seem like a very formidable country, do we? We're not going to be offering very much in the way of resistance. You know, if we really want to feel safe, because you know the way you counter that. Just do things that will make us feel unsafe, and we will, sue for peace? it really is a scary thought. And when this comes, when this sort of signaling comes from the Navy, from the military itself, it does make you, gives you pause about the leadership in this country. Whatever happened to challenging people, challenging men, to be courageous, to be heroic, rather than, well, we want to be safe. Well, yeah, yes, of course, on some level, we want to be safe, and I'm all in favor of environmental safety and all of that, and just as a practical matter, you want to keep your own soldiers as safe as possible. You don't want them dying needlessly from preventable circumstances. But on the other hand, you're looking for a certain degree of risk. This will be the third night on which I've said something about climate change Barbie. Now that's Catherine McKenna. Now she was the environment minister from 2015 to 2019 in Justin Trudeau's first government. But she's been shifted to another portfolio. And she was called Climate Change Barbie because that was her calling card, stock and trade. She was big on fighting, initially, of course, it was global warming, but then when that turned out to be a lie, climate change. And in some ways, you can't really lose on that because to some degree, the climate's always changing. The big question, though, is it changing because of human activity? Or is it something that we actually have very little to do with? Well, I would take the latter view. Anyway, climate change Barbie has a very, very thin skin. Last fall, just around the election, somebody spray painted, I believe it was a concrete planter outside her election headquarters, the word cunt. Well, that's all very nice, I agree. It's not polite, and people shouldn't do that, I agree. However, this was an opportunity for a I'm a victim act on the part of climate change Barbie. She said, oh, how hard it was to put up with this abuse, especially being a woman, and women are given such a hard time in electoral politics and blah, 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 blah. And she put later, there was a Royal Canadian Mounted Police investigation. I don't think they ever came up with anything. And she laid on extra security. I thought, extra security? Somebody wrote a vulgar name. Yeah, and I would agree. I don't think that's the right thing. A good thing to do. I'd like to see if you're going to make a criticism, make it a little more profound. part of the cultural mark, our cultural Marxist elite, whether it's bad conscience. They know they're screwing us. They know they're leading us to totalitarianism. But they don't like to be called on. And when they are, they're incredibly fearful. Well, anyway, last Thursday, as I reported, a fellow went to her constituency office because he had a question to ask. And I guess he videoed this on his cell phone, I think. And he rang the buzzer, and a fat woman appeared. And he said, "Can I speak to Catherine?" That's the MP, Catherine McKenna. And she said, "Oh no, the office is closed because of COVID virus." Actually, I shouldn't laugh. It's part of the massive abuse of our rights that is being perpetrated by businesses and by government thanks to this excuse of the COVID virus. I want to emphasize what total bullshit that excuse is. Most constituency offices have several rooms in the office, one of which the MP will occupy if he or she is there. And people can come in and get a coffee, ask the staff some questions, and if the MP is there during those hours, can go in and chat with the MP about their concerns. Now, it's not that difficult if, you know, the social distancing is one of the things we're supposed to be doing to be keeps 6 feet apart. My point being, there should be no good reason for the office to be closed. Anyway, we start off, and the man is very polite. When he's told that the office is closed, he goes ahead with his question. He said, "Well, I wanted to find out," and he said one minister had said a certain program was costing $10 million, and another minister said it was $5 million, and the fellow wanted to know what the case was. And then when he was again told the office was closed, he lost it, and he used some choice words. Well, you'd think he tossed a hand grenade. The condemnation. All sorts of members of parliament have condemned this. This is absolutely unacceptable. That's the new slogan. No, I'll tell you what's unacceptable. That the offices that should be open to serve the public, the taxpayers' money has paid for. What is unacceptable is that those offices are not open. Anyway, early this morning on the state-owned broadcasting corporation, the CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, but for several generations we've called it the Communist Broadcasting Corporation. There was a segment of a news show. The host was Michael Serapio. He's definitely not white. I think he's Filipino, but okay. And sometimes among the announcers, it's hard to find a white person. And I note that because Canada is still 78% European. But so eager are our masters to force the third world is upon us, if you just dropped in, let's say, from Greenland and didn't know much about Canadian society, you might fairly conclude that there are hardly any white people here. So anyway, Michael Serapio is the host, and he's interviewing a woman named Sharmita, and she's with an outfit called Equal Voice, and it's in Mississauga, and it tries to get more women involved in politics. And Sharmita was in high dudgeon because of the incident at Catherine McKenna's constituency office last Thursday. And she said, just more examples of patriarchy and misogyny, and this whole list of cultural Marxist defamations of our culture. I thought, patriarchy. The guy didn't say anything about he wanted only men should be in charge. He was complaining at about a number of government programs, the weird relations with this with these charity hustlers, Mark and Craig Kielberger, that the federal government had, the Liberal government had, and it was under heavy fire, has had to drop. But he had several other issues. But she was going on about patriarchy and misogyny. The man never said, I don't think women should be involved in politics. The man had a negative comment about her, and he did once again use the term cunt. I don't think that's does him any credit, and it's not something I approve of. But how many people might direct a comment at a male that they don't like and call him something like a dick or a dickhead, or you know what I mean? That's not misogyny. It may be vulgar, but it's not misogyny. But there's this big boo-hoo-hoo about patriarchy and misogyny, and oh, how hard it is. McKenna did give a press conference, and she was going on about oh, how hard it is to, for women in politics and what they have to put up with. And if she knew when she got in what she knows now, she might not have gotten involved in politics. And you really want to say what Harry Truman said, that if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Politics does involve some nastiness. People say nasty things and they don't agree with you. And some of them are over the top. And I'm not so sure what this guy said was over the top, but you've got to have a thick skin. If you don't, then maybe it's the wrong calling for you. God, the mania and censorship and repression. It looks as though two Metropolitan Toronto Police may be in some trouble. Police Professional Standards Unit is investigating after cops post photo with anti-mask campaigner. And this was a photo posted on Instagram featuring two Toronto police officers posing this past weekend with anti-mask campaigner Chris Skye. Now, Chris is the organizer of a protest that's been going on since late March, every Saturday at Queen's Park, which is just outside the legislative buildings in Toronto. Which is the site of the legislative buildings. And the protesters who come out have vowed that they, and I'm one of them, we will be there until the lockdown is ended. Okay, so that's kind of the background. Well, what's the story here? Toronto police say its Professional Standards Unit is investigating after a police-branded Instagram account posted a photo of two cops with an ardent anti-mask campaigner. The photo in question was posted over the weekend by the Toronto Police Service Neighborhood Watch account for 51 Division. In it, two officers are seen smiling and standing next to Chris Skye, who is head of a group called Mothers Against Distancing. Skye helped organize a protest against mandatory mask wearing on the TTC back in July, as well as weekly demonstrations against COVID-19 restrictions at Queen's Park. Early on, Premier Ford called the protests absolutely irresponsible and reckless, and actually called the people a bunch of, that's us, a bunch of yahoos. Skye also helped distribute exemption cards
in an attempt to get around the emergency bylaws Toronto's enacted requiring face coverings in indoor public spaces. Masks are also now required in apartment and condo building common areas in the city.
It's an absolute police state, even though these cloth masks will not stop a virus, which is incredibly small.
They are being, or the police, I guess, are going to be investigated by the professional standards for what? For being in a photograph with this fellow. A good friend, Bauman Yazdanfar, who is a great freedom fighter, made a very interesting comment. He said, I saw this morning, and the first thing I thought, the first thought that came to my mind was the metastasis of cancer. How fast and vicious the agenda of stifling individuals has spread through every single organization and entity during the last few years. Here is the contradiction. The Toronto Police Service spends lots of taxpayers' money on the Neighborhood Community Officer Program, and yet investigates their officers who take a picture with members of a community. The idea of community policing is that instead of just riding around in cars waiting to be called to investigate a crime or after a crime has occurred, these officers mingle with the community or in the community, get to know the people in the community, and are in a better position to enforce the law. There is something to be said for that model of policing. When police are involved in the community, know the community, if there's a crime kind of on their beat, they're usually in a much better position to be able to know who to go to for help, who might be around, be able to tell us, tell us something about, this situation. Who are the go-to people in the community, rather than if police are not involved in the community and. It'll have to pretty much start from scratch in an investigation. There are other models of policing, that's not really the point here, but that's what is behind the idea of community policing. And here, these officers at least will be investigated for having posed with members of the community. Well, here's some of the comments. To this story. Justin Gunther says, I couldn't care less so long as the police are helping their community. Another person writes, who really wants a future where posing with a friend wearing the wrong shirt might have job-ending consequences? Weirdos, that's who. Total weirdos who want to destroy this country. Amy Kramer says, I'm not an anti-mask campaigner, but I strongly disagree with mask mandates, and I will go out of my way not to wear a mask unless it's inexplicably mandated. No one has explained why we are wearing masks. Well, I might disagree with Amy only to the point of saying nobody has explained convincingly. In fact, what we've been told is being repeatedly contradictory. At first, we were told that masks did little good and were actually stigmatizing people. I could never quite figure out what that meant, stigmatizing, but that's what we were told back in March. And then gradually the party line shifted to, well, they might do some good, to, well, they're advisable, and now in many areas, you must wear them, even though the infection rate's going way down. Stanley Kerr responds, typical CBC trying to make a story out of nothing. I'm sure they can find Trudeau or Tory posing in a photograph with a questionable individual. Yeah, and that's the point. And the person named Bustamante says, this seems to be a continuation of the media campaign to smear policemen and defund the police. I no longer believe any of the mainstream media fake news. Policemen have been doing a great job, and we thank them. We support their efforts on keeping everybody safe while people exercise their freedom of assembly and speech. And in general, at least in Toronto, I would say that person's remark is correct. The police have been fairly good at these protests. I do have a couple of quibbles about one or two things, but they've taken largely a hands-off approach, which is good. Let the protests continue, and certainly our people have always been peaceful. Now, this last Saturday, two officious cops showed up at the Queen's Park protest. And they saw a guy smoking, and they came over and told him he had to put a cigarette out. He's not allowed to smoke in a public park. I wasn't sure there was such a rule. I'm not even sure there is, but not allowed to smoke. we do live in repressive times. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my little musical break now, and I'm going to play some cuts from a CD called Queens of Country Music. Women who, over the decades, have made a big contribution to country and western music. So this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on alt-righttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com.
Take the ribbon from my hair, shake it loose and let it fall. Laying soft against your skin, like the shadows on the wall. Come and lay down by my side till the early morning light. All I'm taking is your time. Help me make it through the night. I don't want to be
those from days gone by. And did I hear you say he was meeting you here today to take you to his mansion in the sky?
Thank you.
Fighting side of me, back with you again tomorrow, same time. And I sign off tonight as I always do with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, once the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and wine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever.